Here's where we're going today, okay? Here's why we're doing this today. We're landing a series today. That's why we're starting a new one next week, right? The series that we're landing is simply called My Real Family. And if you haven't been able to be here, that's cool. You can go online and kind of catch up if you want to. You can download the Grace app and get the sermons that way. In a nutshell, here's what we've said in this series together. We said it's a relevant series. We'll have a family. But we hear the conversation through different filters. The purpose for that is saying that is because we all have different experiences. Your family experience is different than mine, right? And so all through this series, I have people coming to me and saying, wow, my experience was this, and somebody else might. So you're going to hear everything we're saying through your filter, and that's okay. We also said this, that our culture is having this conversation because it knows something's broken, missing. So it's reaching to experience this thing called family, to understand it, to define it. And we said, what if we leaned into God? What if we just took a minute and leaned into God during this series? And that's what we've done. And here's what God has said, okay? And if you've been here, you've known this. But God has something to say about the family. And when it comes to the family, he has an ideal. And so we teased that out. What's God's ideal? He has an ideal. You can go clear back to the Garden of Eden, the very beginning of God's story in Genesis. Figure that out. And he teases it out through the Bible. Problem is, tension is, when it comes to my family, what's real is not ideal, right? And we all would agree with that, right? What I really experienced in my family, that's not really what God's ideal is. There's all kinds of problems, bumps along the way. Things didn't work out quite right. And so what do we do? How do we navigate that? And we said this, we dare not give up on God's ideal, right? Dare not give up on God's ideal and don't toss it to the curb while we help heal what's real. Only thing I know to do that is this thing called the gospel. And you can kind of go back and hear how we kind of navigated that conversation. We said the gospel helps me heal what's real when it comes to really deep family hurts. Family will hurt you, does hurt you. It's the gospel that helps us resolve conflicts in a way that restores relationships and resolves the issue. It's also the gospel that helps give power to serving each other in your family. And so this morning, we just kind of want to land it by saying, okay, how does the gospel and what does that say about parenting? And we thought maybe a different way to do it is to have my wife come up here and sit with me and us just kind of talk out loud with you about some things about parenting. And so I'm really glad that she's here with me, and this is her third service. When she said to me on the way out of the office, I can't believe I said yes to you, I said, are you talking about this morning, or are you talking about 26 years ago, okay? This week is our anniversary, 26 years married, right? That's pretty cool, yeah. And I've been sharing in every gathering, and might as well share it this one, but I had somebody 2 weeks ago say they couldn't believe that we have conflict. Like, there's no way Pastor Dan and his wife have conflict. And they also had trouble believing that when we have conflict, most of the time I'm right, right? I mean, do you want to share anything with them about that?
We were on vacation one time, and we stopped in this little trinket store, you know, and they had this plaque, and it said, I didn't realize when I married Mr. Wright that his first name was Always. And whoa. I said, I should buy you that. That would be good for you.
And off to a bang with a start, right? So here's the deal. Here, we really want you to hear what we're going to say right at the outset before we say anything else. First is this. Jennifer and I feel like, do not sit up here because we feel like we're some sort of super parents. Just the opposite. We know where we've failed and stepped on our shirt tails along the way. In fact, we know lots of people who are more qualified to sit up here and talk to you about parenting than us. We just happen to have the role where we get the opportunity to do it. And so what we want to share with you is kind of what we know, and we know what we know is not all there is to know. It's important that you know that. What we've experienced through failing and experiencing life together is not all there is to know. So we just kind of want to empty our cup into your cup and realize that's not going to fill your cup. You're going to need other people and experiences and books and things to fill your cup. We also are very aware of this, you become an expert before you go through a particular stage of life. So we were experts at parenting before we ever had kids. Anybody with me on that, right? And then when you have toddlers running around, you're pretty sure you're an expert on how to raise teenagers, right? Well, when my kids get, and then they become teenagers and you realize, no, it's not that easy. And so we just want you to hear our heart and contextualize what we say as we kind of have slugged out. We're very ordinary, just like you, and we've had a lot of things where we're like, I wish we could have a redo and things like that, but we just want to share some things that God's put on our heart. But a great place to start would be for you, because I've been finding out all morning that there's a lot of people who have never met her, didn't even know that was my wife, and have never met our family. So why don't you introduce our family to this group?
On the upper left there with the tie on, that's our oldest son, Joel. And he is married to the lovely girl in the middle with the long brown hair, Jessica. And we just love her. And he's going to graduate from college this fall. Rachel's down in front, and she is a freshman this year in college. She just graduated. In the back is our baby, Aaron. And he's 17. He's a junior in high school. And then in the middle there is my mom, and she lives with us, and we love her too.
Yes. And I said I like to have a good time with my mother-in-law, who's lived with us for the last 7 years. And so I told her, we're going to talk about parenting. I'm going to tell them everything I know about raising an 80-year-old teenager, is what I told her, right? And she's sitting right there, all right? I love it. So your experience and what you're going through right now, it probably is a lot different than ours. Here's our hope. Just take some of what we say and contextualize it. Put it in your context, okay? But probably the first thing that Jen and I, when we were talking about what we would share, that we would say about what was important to us, at the core of everything we did as parents was simply this. We believe wholeheartedly that we're the primary spiritual coaches in our children's life. That God gave us these kids and that our role is to be the primary spiritual coaches in their life. Proverbs chapter 4 is an interesting verse. If you don't have this underlined in your Bible or don't know, you got to write it down. It's key. It says, above everything else, I want you to guard your heart. Why? It's the wellspring of life. Everything flows from the heart, right? And so Jesus teases this out a little bit. He says, your behavior, your speech, it all comes from the heart. And so what we believe in parenting is God's called us to impress, shepherd, coach our children's heart. And that he's not only given us that responsibility and role, but this is key, okay? Because some of you are young parents, right? But he's going to empower us and give us the power and the ability to do it. He's given us these kids, so it's our responsibility. But not only because he gave us this responsibility, but there's another real tangible reason that we feel that.
Well, you spend the most time with your child. You know, even with school and church on the weekends, you still are the person who spends the most time with your child. And this is just a little illustration of that. If you took the day your child was born and counted up the number of weekends that you have with your child until they graduate, there's like 930. So there's 930 marbles in that bowl right there. So if you took out one every weekend, and it starts to go down. At first, it doesn't go down very fast, you know, because you're up at night, you're doing a lot of stuff that's really stretching you. But you start to watch it go down. It's just a real visual reminder that I don't have as much time as I think I do. It goes fast.
Yeah, and so we got two jars that are empty and one that is getting close to empty. I like to think of it this way. The further we go, the more we lose our marbles when it comes to parenting, right? I thought about getting a jar for my mother-in-law. Maybe I was going to put marbles in, right, every year. That's awesome. I love her to death, and I just pick on her crazy, so I love doing this, all right? But one of the things, if you can't tell, you're going to have to bear with us. Last week, I didn't have a voice. I came in pretty strong with a voice. We're both struggling right now, so hang in there with us. If we cough, we apologize. But there is a passage in Deuteronomy chapter 6 that's key. Parents, you ought to put this down, write it down, highlight it. Says, Hear, O Israel, Lord our God, Lord is one. Love God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength. It says, these commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts, right? First starts there, on our hearts. And then he says, impress them on your children. How? We'll talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands, bind them on your foreheads, write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. And so, therefore, we feel like we're the primary spiritual coaches. There's several things that we felt like were important for us to impress on our children, albeit imperfectly. First is this, okay? We wanted our kids, this is Jennifer and I, to know that God is bigger than they think and that he loves them more than they realize. Okay, and it's key that I say it that way. Here's why I say it that way. We wanted our kids to know, love, and respond to God, not simply follow rules in the Bible. You tracking? We wanted our kids to know, love, and respond to God. Here's why. Somebody, I don't know who it was, somebody a lot smarter than me, said, rules without relationship will lead to rebellion. That's interesting, right? Rules without relationship will lead to rebellion. So our goal wasn't say, hey, let's just follow the rules in the Bible, right? But we wanted them to know God is big. God is bigger than you think. Why? Well, you know, when you're little, you're like, Daddy can do anything. But they don't have to get very old, so they're like, yeah, Dad, there's some things Dad can't do, right? Dad can't do anything. But I wanted them to know that they could run to God. He's all-powerful. Nothing was impossible for him. And so what our hope was that running into God's presence, this big, powerful God, would be their first response, not their last resort. See how that works, right? I mean, that works outside of parenting even. That works just in life. God's big. But I also had this desire that I wanted them to know God loves them more than they know. And so Jen and I tried hard, albeit imperfectly, please hear us say that, to help our kids understand God loves you. And so therefore, for us, we never used the tactic, and if you do, it's fine. I'm not being critical of it. But you know, be careful. God might catch you. And if he catches you, he's going to be really, really mad at you, right? I mean, you try to bribe your kids, like, God's watching. He's going to nail you, right? The reason for that is this, because the truth is, God doesn't have to catch you. He sees you. And so once your kids know, he's watching. He knows everything about you. He knows things about you that I don't or ever will know, right? And there's things about your kids you'll never know till they get older and they'll confess, right? But he knows what you're thinking. He knows what's going on when I'm not with you. And you know something? He knows all of it, inside and out. And you know what's really incredible? Like, he loves you. And they get a hold of that, and all of a sudden the gospel leans in. It's like, oh. See, it paints a different picture of God. It's not like, God, I'm afraid of. He might catch me. Kind of like, you know, Santa Claus, where he, you know, he's seeing whether you're good or nice. But I want you to know God loves you. He sees you. And so, therefore, we didn't want our kids. Now, this is key. This is for us. We weren't trying to just raise our kids to be good kids. We're trying to have them modify their behavior. We wanted them to cultivate their relationship with God, a God who's big, a God who loves them. One of the keys that we knew is that our relationship was key in that.
Yeah, and our marriage is probably the most powerful picture of the gospel that our children will see, that your children will see, as they watch you serve each other and love each other. It's important for them. And we tried to spend time investing in our marriage even when our kids were young. We would have date nights, or now we have a lunch every week together at the same time that we catch up with each other and check in with each other.
Yeah, so kids get to see you just live out the gospel, right? Ephesians 5 talks about that. It's just powerful. So if your kids get to see you love your spouse and cultivate that relationship with your spouse, I would say this. Our kids, and if you ask them, if they were honest, they would tell you this. I mean, they've seen us fight, you know, like have conflict. That's not something we try to shield them from. And because somehow they need to see that conflicts can be resolved. If a kid never sees conflict, they assume there's no conflict. First time they ever experience it, they're like, well, how do you resolve that? And so the gospel gets to play into that. I get asked this a lot, and I would write it this way. Coaching, how do you coach them? Like, what do you do to coach them? I think it's formal and informal. So what we believe is there's really intentional ways you do it, and then you take advantage of opportunities, just everyday life opportunities. People ask me this all the time, do you guys sit down? And, you know, there's some people who think the life in a preacher's house, like, do you guys, like, do church every night? I mean, no, we're very ordinary, normal people, guys, okay? But when our kids were younger, we did very intentional things to teach them about God and in his word. And so when they were really little, we did, some of you may do this, kind of bath time and then Bible time. Right, so they get their bath, you get their pajamas on, and then you would do Bible time. Now, what I would say is, if you have little kids, manage your expectations. Right, sometimes if you can get them to sit for 5 minutes, you're like, woo, success. Right, I mean, it can be a circus, but if you do it over time, every time, it can be a really fun time. So the way we chose to do it, this was the way our family's personality. We would go through stories of the Bible, and we would just act them out. You know, the kids were little, and they had lots of energy, so instead of saying, sit in a row, we said, well, what if you played this part? You played this part. Let's act it out. And to this day, our kids will know some of those stories that were some of their favorite. Like, if you read the book of Judges, this is really in the Bible. You can check me on it. There's a judge who was a left-handed judge, okay, which Aaron is left-handed, so right away we had a connection, right? And this left-handed judge, the story goes, had a knife that he pulled, and he stuck into the belly of a really, really fat king. And that king's belly kind of lopped over the knife, where the knife got lost in his fat. And so can you imagine? Yeah, I mean, some of you are like, really? Yeah, check it out. So we're acting this thing out of an Ehud, and they still know that story. We have no idea what the application is, but it is an incredible story that we would have fun acting out together. And we had a blast doing it. And so just find creative ways to do it. Something when the kids were little, if you have, I see some of you got smaller kids, and this was a priority to us, but making coming to church gatherings a priority was very important to us. Consistently, and it's like, I know what some of you are thinking, duh, you're the preacher, right? I mean, it just had to be that way. And I just want to say, because she wouldn't say it on her own, but I will, that no, that's not like a duh thing, because some of you in the room and are like, man, I'm a single mom, right? And I would say my wife very much experienced that in terms of bringing the kids to church. I've never helped her get our kids to church, ever once. Reason being, because of what I do, I'm always here, right? And so she would always get them ready and bring in car seats, and I watched her do this over time. But the consistency over time is something that we wanted to pour into our kids. And if our kids were telling us, it wasn't always easy, was it? It was kind of a circus, wasn't it?
No, because sometimes by the time you get them in the car, like, they would be crying and I would be yelling, or they would be yelling and I would be crying. And we would, we only were like 10 blocks from our church, but sometimes I would drive and drive and they'd say, you passed the church. Aren't we going to church? I'm like, yeah, I'm just trying to get it decked together, you know? So we get into the church. Just calm down.
Sometimes so. I'd come out to preach, and I'd look and make sure Jennifer was in there. She survived, right? She made the morning. But as the kids got older, obviously we didn't do bath and Bible time, right? It got kind of weird when Aaron got 17, right, to do bath and Bible time. But one of the things that was important is we wanted to encourage them to cultivate their own relationship with God. So spending time hearing from God in his word and talking to God. And our coaching became more informal. And so around the dinner table was big for us. But it could be while you're playing outside. There's always moments to capture and to take advantage of a chance to teach them. I would say in that coaching, something that I think is important personally is to talk to God with and about your child. Let me explain that. Which is simply a different way to say pray with them and pray about them. But I say it that way for a reason. I think it's important to talk out loud to God with your child. How does your child get to hear and see what a relationship with God's like? Well, they get to see it demonstrated, right? And so Jesus one time was asked by his disciples, teach us how to pray. And so what did he do? He prayed. He said, our Father, which art in heaven. And so, anyways, to talk out loud. Now, here's the deal. And I've talked to tons of parents, particularly dads. So can I talk to dads for a second? It's like, I'm not a good prayer. I'm going to say something, and I feel pretty safe saying this. It's like, don't worry about being a good prayer. I'm more concerned if somebody thinks they're a good prayer. Okay? I really am. Be a real prayer. Like, how do you, just be real and talk to God. And cultivate a conversation with God and let your kids listen in on that. And so pray out loud with them and then pray intentionally for them. In other words, this, pray for their safety. Yeah, that's all good. You know, God, keep my kids safe. I'm not downing that. But pray bigger than that. Say, God, would you please help my child recognize how big you are, how much you love them? God, would you help me to know how to take the next steps with them? You know, go to Ephesians 1, Ephesians 3, Colossians 1. See how Paul prayed for the church and adapt that to praying for your kids that way. Man, it's amazing because God's going to do more work in them than you could ever accomplish as a parent. That's probably key, right? We need God to show up, right? I mean, we all know that. And so I'd say pray with them and pray for them. But we would say beyond that, it goes beyond the two of us.
And we knew that we needed other people to help us with our kids. And so we would partner with other people who could influence them. And we would coach them, but we also used other resources like Power Kids. Our kids would go to a class every week. Mrs. Stair has been teaching for like 40 years. She's still teaching. Some of my kids had her. She invested in them as they grew out of that stage and started going to student ministries. Greg and Shannon invested in them. People like the Purdy's took them on a mission trip one time. And they'll come home and say things that these other people said, and they're saying the same thing you're saying, but they will listen to it differently from those people. And so we felt like those were really good things to invest in. Then we also wanted our children to not only have adults, but we wanted them to have peers that would walk with them going down that same path. So another reason we felt like Power Kids and student ministries were important were because they were going to meet friends there who would walk that same spiritual path with them. They could encourage each other. They were going to school together. They were doing things in their D groups together. And it was sort of like a whole picture.
And some of the things that, I don't know if you're a parent, if you've ever experienced this, but you can tell your kid something 100 times, and they go sit in a D group with Greg Foote, and he says something to them that you've said 100 times, and your kid's kind of like, man, Greg had this incredible, profound thought, and it's like they're sharing this, and you're sitting there like, I said that 100 times, but it's fine. It's cool. Because you know something? Sometimes they just hear it different from somebody else, and you need those people in your life. Unless you think, well, that's the preacher and his wife standing up there doing a commercial for what's going on here. We real people, and hear us as parents. When we first moved here 7 years ago, our son Joel was a freshman. I remember this vividly. Jennifer talking to me about this, and he went the first time to our youth ministry, and he came home and said, don't want to go back, don't want nothing to do with that, I don't like that, that's not what I want to do. We didn't send him back. He went back. We didn't send him back because, like, you got to go to church. That's not how we rolled. You know why we said, no, Joel, this is what's best? Because parents are coaches, because you need other people speaking into your life and influencing you. And so he's married now, and he actually works with teenagers and invests in them. But it wasn't, like, smooth the whole time. Okay, that's not how it rolls. And so sometimes you as a parent make a decision to help them get a hold of that as their coach. Second thing I write down, primary spiritual coaches, this is really key, is we wanted to, in our family, create an atmosphere of acceptance and security. And so we've learned this, we've read this, you've experienced it. But one of the ways kids most commonly feel love is acceptance and security. Okay. Just mark it down. If you've been through life at all, acceptance and security, because I can tell you this, the opposite of those things resonate. When they feel rejection and insecurity, those things will follow you not just through childhood and teenage years, but they follow you into adulthood, right? I mean, just trust me on that. Lots of people's story. I meet with a lot of people. I've done this for 21 years, and I have a lot of adults who will come in, and it's obvious that there is rejection and insecurity. And so how do you do that? Well, this is just two ways. There's more than this. Two ways, as we were just having some fun talking about how it rolled out in our house, is first and foremost to recognize the power of your words. The power of your words. That you as a parent, your words have power. And so therefore, to be very careful, and we've all done it. We've all done it. I was the king of it, right? We all have done it. You can be flippant with your words and say things you're like, ooh, I wonder if I can get that back in there, right? Okay, we've all done it. But when I recognize the power of my words, Andy Stanley, maybe a name some of you recognize, says something interesting that I'm going to read it so that you get it. He says, decide what they need. Now, if you got young kids, listen up. Decide what they need to hear ahead of time and then say it 10 times more than they need to hear it. I think that's interesting, right? To decide what do they need to hear. And so for us, kind of some of the things, my kids wouldn't even know, you were being intentional with that? Yeah, we decide, because we said it over and over again. But some of the things that we would say, Jennifer and I, one of the things my kids know, because we would say it, is that you can do nothing to make me love you more or less. There's nothing you can do that's going to make me love you more. And there's nothing you're going to do to make me love you less. In other words, we didn't want our kids to be insecure. Do I need to earn more of their love? Did I step outside of the circle of their love? So we would say that over and over because I wanted them to operate in this sphere of security. Does that make sense? And then there were specific things that, for me, that I wanted to say to the boys because of just how I felt guys are wired and in my experience. For instance, and I got one sitting in here, and he'd be like, oh, wow, yeah, you know. But I would say to my boys, they would hear me say, I love you, and things like that. But I would say to the boys, I'm proud of you, and I admire the way you've handled that. Why? I have tons of adult men who will come into my office and they're still seeking the approval of their dad. I wonder if I was good enough. And so when I catch them working hard, doing something, I'm like, I want them to know I'm proud of you. Or I'll say, hey, look for an opportunity to lead today. You know, so I'll say that. Now, I would say those things to my daughter as well, but there was something I would say to Rachel over and over again, as her father. And I would always try to say to her, sweetheart, I want you to know you're beautiful. You are beautiful. And I'd want her to know that. I'd want her to have absolutely no doubts about that. There's a lot of reasons for that, not the least of which I thought some greasy-haired teenager was going to say it to her someday, and I wanted to be the first to say it, right? And so I didn't want her to have any insecurity, because sometimes when they hear it from somebody out here, and it's the first time they've heard it, it's like, bam, all of a sudden it's like a magnet, and they gravitate to it. So I wanted her to operate in this sphere of security. So power of the words creates space that's secure in acceptance, but not just power of words. There's something else that I think has powerful impact.
Power of your presence, your time with them, the time that you spend with them. And there's certain periods of time in your life where they need more time from you, and you may have to give up things like that you like to do, maybe your hobbies or things that are important to you that you're going to have to put on hold to spend that time with them, because parenting isn't one of those great big like, oh, we took this great vacation and now we're like set, we're good. It's a little bit at a time over a long period of time, investing in them, that is really important.
And so one of the things, I feel like you did a great job of this, but my schedule's crazy, okay? It's crazy. It's all over the place. And so I feel like she did a great job, and we kind of came around. But dinner time at our house is sacred, right? And she was always great at making sure it was special, whether we were on hot dogs, macaroni and cheese, whatever it was, we're always around the table, became sacred space. She has a little, sometimes she felt this way. Can you read that?
Why do they want dinner every single night?
Anybody else in the room ever feel that way? Yeah.
So it doesn't really matter what you're feeding them, it's just the time together that's important.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We'll say this and then we'll race on for the sake of time, but two things I'd say. Sometimes as I talk with parents, you may feel this way. Sometimes what can happen is we can try to make up for lost time by, man, I'm going to do this really big thing and get my kid this really big gift or take him on this really expensive vacation to make up for lost time so that I can really. And the truth is, it's small investments over time consistently. That's what it is. And so those big things are like, yeah, that's cool, that's exciting, but they kind of wear off. And it's like deciding to do, and it's just being present. It was interesting, and I think more than one. We text with our kids this last 2 weeks and saying, hey, tell us what mattered and what. And I think it was our oldest that, I don't know how he said it, but it was interesting his response. He's like, I just knew you were there, and you were always around. Like at everything, like you could, you know, and it's like there was something he was trying to say, there's a power in presence. And it's like, you know, we just showed up. And it was interesting that that's what stood out to him, because we've done some cool things. None of our kids mentioned those things. It was those little deposits and investments over time. And so don't minimize those things, some of you, and sometimes they'll be harder than easier. Another thing we'd say is this, and we'll tease this out, is for us, at this stage, on this end of it, realize each kid is a unique gift with special gifts from God. Psalm 127 says that kids are a gift from God, right? So that's what Psalms 127 says. And so I like to think of it this way. If you have little kids, dial in. This, you have to use your imagination a little bit, right? But I like to think, if the kids are a gift from God, I like to think that God specifically picked out that gift for you. That's how I like to think about my kids. Like, I think if God's a gift giver, like, he doesn't go buy one gift and just hand it out to everybody. You ever meet somebody like that at Christmas? They give the same gift to everybody, right? I like to think God gave the unique three gifts to us that he chose to give to us. It doesn't mean there aren't times, and we all have it, don't judge me, where you want to exchange your gift and get your money back. I get it, right? Right? Okay. And it doesn't mean that sometimes they don't think, why am I your gift, right? I mean, they probably have the same thought. But the truth is, it kind of helps you realize God gave me this special gift, these special gifts. Because sometimes you're like, man, my kid struggles with this. My kid doesn't. And you begin to look. And one thing, we didn't say this the other two gatherings, and it can be real easy to begin comparing to everybody else's life. You think everybody else's life is, you know, they got it easy. The grass is greener, right? And very rarely is it. But when you look at your kids and like, no, God gave me these gifts. And they're special. And here's the deal, they're unique. Because we've experienced, our kids are very different, aren't they?
Yeah, even our boys are very different from each other. So they're all, you know, unique in their own way. But one of the things that's was a goal of ours was to find out what they were really good at and help them to grow in that area and accentuate that. The things that they weren't really good at or they needed a little extra help in to work with them on those things that they needed help with. And each child is really different personality-wise. You find that with your own families. Joel never talked until he was like 2.5. He just didn't really have anything to say, and, you know. And Rachel, on the way home from the hospital, was trying to figure out how to talk, you know. So we were riding along in the car one day, and I could hear, you know, she was always talking and always in the car, so I heard Joel say, "Mom," I said, "What?" He said, "Just make it stop." Because he just...
That was last week, by the way.
He liked the solitude. She liked the noise, you know. So you have to help your kids come to some happy mediums on their personalities. And
yeah, it's fascinating. Let me show you a verse that a lot of you have heard, okay? And because it's interesting. Proverbs 22, you can get plaques with this card. It's, "Train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it." It's like, that seems pretty straightforward, right? Many of you have heard it. And so the way you interpret it is like, train him up in the way he should go. And that's a great way to interpret it. But of all things, I had a Hebrew professor. The Old Testament was written originally in Hebrew. You can forget that. He said, "Dan, this verse is interesting because you can translate the word that way. Train him up in the way he should go. So teach your kids the right things about God and the way to live." Sort of. But he said that same word, "in the way he should go," can also be translated "in the way that he is bent." Figure out how he's bent and then help him get there. Find out what he's strong at, how his personality. And so basically we took from that, maybe a good coach trains them up in the way he should go and figures out the way that their personality and does it in a way that they're bent. And so some of the things I think we would say, and guys, I wish we had done this more better at times, but I would say if you got multiple kids in your home, be really, really, really diligent at not comparing them, right? And create a culture of competition among them. You see, if you create a culture of competition among them, well, you're not as good as your brother, or you're not, you know, whatever the case may be, you're going to erode acceptance and security. They're going to always wonder, am I meeting up? Am I doing it? See what I mean? And so if you can help them appreciate their differences. So eventually it's like, I think if you were to talk to Joel, he like appreciates his sister's different than him. She has more words than him. And I think if you talk to Rachel, she's like, yeah, I can appreciate the fact there's times it's probably good to be quiet, you know, and just kind of enjoy that. And if you can teach them that, and if they really are gifts, and teach them we're better because we're together and different, then all of a sudden it's not like we have to compete, but we can complete this whole picture God's putting together called our family. Something else we were talking about is this, is that if you're going to appreciate their uniquenesses, this is going to sound weird at first, but if you got little kids, write this down. It'll come in handy. Quit trying to be fair. I mean that. Don't try to be fair. I think you'll shipwreck the whole deal. You say, "Dan, what do you mean?" Well, I might interact with one and they might say, "That's not fair. You did this or gave this to him and not to me." And I've said this more than once to our kids. I'm not trying to be fair. Like, I'm not even trying to be fair, because sometimes what's fair is not best. What I'm trying to do is what's best for you. And so I want to do what's best, and what's best might not seem fair, but that, I'm okay with that. You know why? Because that's what's best. And so quit trying to be fair. Don't compare. Things like that is what we'd say. Let's say something else, and this may not make sense at first, and so we're going to tease it out a little bit, okay? But we feel pretty strongly about this, and our culture, I think, needs to hear this, and it's not always easy, and that is to prioritize your children, but don't idolize them. Okay, now, not everybody's going to agree with us on this, and if you don't agree, send your emails to jgregory@graceohio.org. She'd love to talk with you, right? But Let me just say a couple of things. We believe God gave us these gifts, and they are a priority. Our kids have been a priority. That when you say no, as she was talking about, to things in your schedule, to hobbies, you may be saying yes to the most important thing, your kids, right? Okay, so that's their priorities, but they're not meant to be idols. An idol takes the place that's reserved for God in your life. And I would go a step further, not just God, but sometimes if you place your kids in the spot that's reserved for your spouse, they get put in the wrong spot. And here's the deal. When you put your kids in that spot, you harm them. You know why? Because you feed in them what already comes natural to them. You know what comes natural to them? Selfishness. We're all hardwired with it, every last one of us in this room. And so you feed what all of a sudden becomes destructive in them. They're self-centered. Not only that, but you deplete from them some of the most important things to help you be the parent that God wants you to be. And that is your relationship with God and your relationship with your spouse if you're married, okay? And so one of the things, I've shared this, and please hear my heart on this, okay? But I've shared this in the first two gatherings, and I'll share it here. But I've been asked more than once, you know, who is your wife? She doesn't sit up there with you. Does your wife even come to church? You know, is what they'll say to me. And you do come to church, right? Okay, you do come to church. But the reason you don't see her here, I want to share her passion with you, is my wife works every Sunday morning down in our nursery area. She is our nursery coordinator. And she has a passion to love and care for your kids. And I would say if you have young kids, and please hear my heart on this, and I'm going to say this gently, but we both would feel very strongly about this. Take advantage of putting your kid in the nursery for the hour you're in here. You're saying, why? I want to be with my kid, right? I get it. But here's why. Several reasons. One is everybody in our nursery is background checked. And they're passionate about wanting to love and nurture your kid while you have a chance to, in an undistracted fashion, be able to cultivate your relationship with God. Here's why that's important. Because you think, well, I want to spend that time, that hour with my kid. And here's the thing. Many times we found this because we had kids and it was like, put them in the nursery and they, da-da. But here's the deal. us cultivating our relationship with God was one of the most important things for our kids. And if we're not spending time doing that, we're actually robbing our kids, right? So we can idolize our kid. I got to always have my kid. And we end up depleting what actually is going to pour into them. So she'd love to spend time with your kid on Sunday morning if you have little ones and so on. They have a great thing going. Here's several things. You ought to write these down. I'm going to rapid fire these about prioritizing, not idolizing your kid. We wrote this. We came up with this stuff together. Teach your child early and often that they're part of a family. They're not the center of it. It's probably good to write that down, okay? So for us, this is the way it would roll out in our family. Like, everybody makes trash, so everybody gets to help empty the trash, right? Or my personal pet peeve, everybody empties the toilet paper roll. So everybody ought to be part of changing the toilet paper. Anybody else got the same pet peeve that I do, okay? Yeah, don't judge me. Some of you look at me like, what? But share family responsibilities, but not just that. Enjoy family experiences. So if you have multiple kids, the way it rolled out for us is if Joel had a football game, we went and supported him as a family. You know, and so Rachel sat through lots of football games, right? But if she had a cross-country meet or a volleyball or whatever, it's like, well, I'm not really into that. I know, but we're into our sister. So we're going to go support, and we're going to be about that. And so you share those things together. Another thing that we did, and this is just us, but if in the event that one of my kids was disrespectful to Jennifer, occasionally I wouldn't refer to them as don't talk to your mother. That makes them the center, right? Your mother. I would say to them, I would appreciate you not talking to my wife that way. You're part of a family. She's my wife. Like, this relationship is very important to me. And I'd probably beat a guy up on the street if you talked to him that way, right? So you're three standing there in your diaper acting all mad and stuff. Don't talk to my wife that way, okay? You get it? So helping them understand. But not just that they're part of a family, but I would help them understand that they're part of a community, not the center of it, right? Mm-hmm. And we try to do that intentionally in some ways.
Yeah. And when they went off to school and you're not with them anymore, so you're not coaching them all the time, like, say thank you, say please. whatever. We try to encourage them to look for people in their classes or in their activities that maybe that kid had a hard time making a friend. Like, be a friend to that kid, or maybe somebody who was always alone. Like, go after that person. Try to help them. Try to encourage them. And we also try to talk to them about being kind to other people, because when you go to school, sometimes there's this pressure to be cool and to try and, you know, protect yourself and keep yourself from looking stupid or looking bad. And we'd say, you know, you can try to be cool, but it's much better to be kind. And cool wears off. I mean, most of us in this room are not cool anymore, but being kind...
Except you, Mike.
But being kind is really important, and it just takes you throughout your whole life.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Last thing we said under that is quit running to bail them out all the time. Probably very culturally relevant. Right? We live in a culture that wants to bail our kids out all the time, control all their environments. They get in trouble at school, or a teacher kind of has, and we want to bail them out. Obviously, it was the teacher's fault, not our kid's fault, right? And so we can idolize our kids that way. And so one of the things that I would say is this, is that there's times when you go and bail your kid out. I mean, there's something like, okay, we got to get this under control. But first and foremost, if your kid's having trouble at school or with a coach or whatever and whatnot, it's a great chance to coach them, right? It's a great chance to say, okay, how are we going to deal with that? You know why? Because they're going to deal with injustice in life. They're going to deal with bias in life. They're going to deal with different personalities in life. And so instead of running all the time to bail them out, take the opportunity to coach them. It's like, okay, they got to, and not try to control all their environments. We dealt with that in Indiana with a teacher.
Yeah. Joel was in second grade, and he ended up in a teacher's room, and she was ready to retire. She had had it, you know. And someone had warned me, you should step in and do something about that. And I just didn't feel like that's what God wanted us to do. So he ended up in that classroom. And one day I stopped in to help with something, and she had her back to the door, and she's screaming at the top of her lungs. And there's things flying across the room. Kids are rolling across the floor. It was out of control. And yeah, it's upsetting as a parent. But at the end of that year, I noticed a big change in Joel. He was really able to focus, and it was because it was just chaos for the whole year, but it did something to help him. And so sometimes we need to let God be our child's advocate, you know, let them take care of the things that, you know, that we don't always have control over.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes we would be a sounding board for each other, because one of us would want to go be the vigilante and like stand there, you know, like, wait a minute, let's relax. And so you help each other with that. Something else, I'd write this down, that we feel and probably failed at miserably over and over again, is to discipline early for influence and respect later. And I'm going to kind of rocket through some of this, but Hebrews 12 is a passage that you ought to write down. But it talks about God disciplines us, and that's like a father disciplining. He says, have you forgotten these encouraging words? My child, don't make light of the Lord's discipline. Don't give up when he corrects you. Look at this. For the Lord disciplines those he loves. Love and discipline hold hands. In fact, the book of Proverbs says, if you don't discipline, maybe you don't love your child. And then he says, he punishes each one he accepts. Discipline and acceptance go hand in hand. Did you know that? It's like, that feels weird, counterintuitive. But if I'm not disciplining, maybe the kid figures out they've given up. They don't care if I'm kind of going all over the place. And as you endure divine discipline, remember God is treating you as his children, right? Whoever's heard of a child who's not been disciplined by his father, God doesn't discipline you as he does all of his children. It means that you're illegitimate. You're not his children at all. Since we respect it, respect is cultivated through discipline many times. Our earthly fathers, and then go down, for our earthly fathers disciplined us for a few years. It's temporary. They did the best they knew how. But God's discipline is always good for us so that we might share in his holiness. No discipline is enjoyable while it's happening. It's painful, right? If it doesn't have something like that to it, it's probably not that effective, okay? If somehow it's not got their attention, but it always is to train them. That's how the last part of this ends. And so the deal is to discipline early. We would say this, if there's something like, if you got little kids, discipline Early. In fact, just throw the whole chart up, just the whole chart, the next chart, throw it all up there. We saw this, it was valuable to us. Ages 1 to 5 seemed to be, probably many times at ages 1 to 5, you thought all I'm doing all day long is saying no,
yeah,
and things like mm-hmm. that. And yet, kids come wired, you know. The scripture's pretty clear. We come with sin natures, man, and we try to figure it out. So discipline, but then the ages 6 through 12 become a chance to build the building blocks, teach them about God's word, teach them principles for life and character and things like that, so that your hope is when they're teenagers, you're coaching them. They're going through relationship issues, other gender things, you know, how do I relate with the opposite gender and things, you know, so you coach them through things in life so that later you can have a friendship. One of the things we prayed for and longed for is that we would have a good relationship as adults with our adult children. Listen close, because I got to race to this. But if you give up disciplining them early, you'll give up the opportunity to be their friends and influence them later. Just trust me on it. Because no respect will be cultivated. And so early on, you want to discipline so there's a chance for influence later. Now, several things I would say about discipline is first, one of the things that if you are afraid to discipline because you're afraid they won't like you, right? One of the things we would say to our kids is that my need to be liked by you, is not nearly as big as my love for you. So my need to be liked by you, might not like me right now, is not nearly as big as my love for you. Rachel texted us, I remember when you disciplined us, you used to say this, you're hitting the wall. And I used to say, I'm the wall. You're going to hit the wall. Here's why I say that, because I want you to hit the wall that loves you so that maybe down the road you won't hit a wall that might destroy you. You see how that works? Zig Ziglar has a comment. We throw it up there. Child who's not been disciplined with love by his little world will be disciplined without love by his great big world. I think that's true. And so it's going to be hard. It's going to be long days. I would say this, be creative. Don't just time out, sit in the time out chair, right? And everything's time out. And they tune you out. Be creative and figure out how the discipline fits the crime, so to speak, right? So that they can associate. This is training. So if they've hurt somebody, how do we restore the relationship? Things like that. And do your best. Now listen, do your best not to be a lunatic, right? But you will have those moments. I have sitting in this room, okay? I have sitting in this room one of my kids. And I can remember times when I disciplined him and I thought, oh dear God, I hope he'll forgive me. I hope that he won't remember this, you know, because you are normal, I'm normal, and there's times you discipline out of anger, you discipline out of impulse, and when you do, here's all I would say, own it. Teach your kids what it means to own it and apologize and say, what I did was wrong, but whatever you do, don't give up on disciplining early. So that you can have influence and respect later. And let's end on a good one. Jennifer wants to end on a good one.
And plan to have fun with your family. This picture here is really more what our family is like instead of that nice picture we showed you in the beginning. And we would plan to have fun. We always had a Friday night, pizza night, movie night. The kids are still making fun of the movies I picked, the talking animals and the, like, you know, silly stuff. And but we did that every Friday night for years and years. And so that was a tradition, and we had certain traditions that we did. And we also, you know, would take small family vacations, things that were cheap, and just to get away with them till we could spend that time just alone with them. And we even have fun together when it's not planned. Mm-hmm. And as an adult, you have to, like, for me, I had to let go of, like, they're laughing at me. Like, mm-hmm. Don't laugh at me, I'm your mother. But it's good for them, it's good for you to be able to laugh at yourself and let them laugh with you about silly things that happen in life.
One of our favorite family stories. This is where we'll end. How's that, okay? But my she's great at this. So we have a great time. Just kind of, we laugh a lot. If you see this picture, my daughter-in-law in the middle of that whole clan, I think when she joined our family, she's like, they're crazy, right? And now look, she's the craziest of us all, right? You can see it up there. But one of our favorite stories is Jennifer, 2 years ago, was with our youngest son, Aaron, and we have a pool. She was at the pool store, swimming pool, and she's going to get some things to put into the pool. And Aaron was not driving yet, and he's a very big fella. He's 6'4", about 280. And so she said, I'm going to run in here and get some stuff, and I'm going to leave. Cool, no big deal. She leaves the car running. Problem is, she left the car running, still hadn't put it in park. So she's in the pool store, and he's sitting over there, too big to reach across. The console's in the way. And all of a sudden, as she's in the pool store, he's sitting in the van as the van starts drifting backwards onto Wooster Road. He can't get his foot over to put the brake on, so he gets out of the car, opens the door. He stands in the middle of Wooster Road, and he's doing this to traffic as our van cruises right across Wooster Road into somebody's front yard across from the pool store. He runs into the pool store and says, Mom, if you know Aaron, you can picture it. Mom, our van coasted across Wooster Road and is in somebody's yard. She throws her bag at him. The people in the pool store are looking at her like, is she crazy? What's going on, right? He's standing there, not sure he wants to go home with her by this point, right? She pulls the thing back over in the parking lot, goes in and finishes her business like nothing at all happened. It is our favorite story. It gets better every time we tell it, trust me. And if you own the home across from Eastern Pools, we're sorry that we were in your yard. But here's the deal. Have fun. Have fun. Laugh a lot, okay? Be able to laugh at yourself. But if you're a young parent, hear us say this, okay? Don't give up. Don't give up. Don't give up. Jennifer had a slide made. It says, the days are long, but the years are short. Days are long. There's going to be some days you're like, oh my goodness, I'm not going to survive. And you're going to open your eyes, and they're going to be in college. They're going to be married. The years are going to go by quick. So don't give up. But listen, I want to tell you something else as parents. Listen to me say this. Don't guilt yourself out. It'll paralyze you. Listen, you're going to have days you fail. You're going to swing and miss. Get back up tomorrow and try your best. Try your best to be a spiritual coach and create an atmosphere. Don't guilt yourself out, and don't compare. Mm-hmm. Well, they're so perfect. That mom does it just so right. God gave you your unique gift that he wants you to impress their hearts. So God, help our friends in here that are parents. And thank you for the gifts that you've given to us as kids. We're grateful for that. We need courage. We need strength. We need wisdom. We need patience sometimes. Help us to be able to laugh and enjoy life. I pray that we'd fill our homes with good medicine of laughter. Help us to be intentional about what we say and how we spend our time. And God, help us not to be flippant with the opportunity called today. And so we'll trust you for that, Lord. We pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen.